It all lay right there before him. Rand could not comprehend it. The blackness around it sucked on him, pulled him toward it. He reached out to the pattern and somehow anchored himself in it, lest he be consumed. That changed his focus. It locked him, slightly, into a time. The pattern before him rippled, and Rand watched it being woven. It was not actually the pattern, he knew, but his mind saw it that way. Familiar, as it had been described, the threads of lives weaving together. Rand anchored himself in reality again and moved with it. Time had meaning again, and he could not see ahead or behind. He could see all places, like a man standing above a globe as it turned. Rand faced the emptiness. "So," he said into it, "this is where it will really happen. Morden would have had me believe that a simple sword fight would decide this all."
"He is of me, but his eyes are small."
"Yes," Rand said. "I have noticed the same."
"Small tools can be effective. The thinnest of knives can stop a heart. He has brought you here, adversary."
None of this had happened the last time when Rand had worn the name of Lucerin. He could only interpret that as a good sign. Now the battle truly began. He looked into the nothingness and felt it welling up. Then, like a sudden storm, the Dark One brought all of his force against Rand. Perrin fell back against a tree, gasping at the pain. Slayer's arrow had impaled his shoulder, the arrowhead coming out his back. He didn't dare pull it free, not with... He wavered. Thoughts came lethargically. Where was he? He'd shifted away from Slayer as far as he could go, but... He didn't recognize this place. The trees were odd-shaped on top, too leafy, of a variety he'd never before seen. The storm blew here, but far more weakly. Perrin slipped and hit the ground with a grunt. His shoulder flared with pain. He rolled over, staring up at the sky. He'd broken the arrow when falling.
It's the wolf dream. I can just make the arrow vanish.
He tried to gather the strength to do so, but was too weak. He found himself floating, and he sent outward seeking for wolves. He found the minds of some, and they started, sending back surprise.
A two legs who can talk? What is this? What are you?
His nature seemed to frighten them, and they pushed him out of their minds. How could they not know what he was? Wolves had long, long memories. Surely...
"Fahil," he thought. "So beautiful. So clever. I should go to her. I just need to close this way gate, and I can get back to the two rivers to her."
Perrin rolled over and crawled to his knees. Was that his blood on the ground? So much red. He blinked at it.
"Here you are," a voice said.
Lanfear. He looked up at her, his vision blurry.
"So, he defeated you," she said, folding her arms. "Disappointing. I didn't want to have to choose that one. I find you much more appealing, wolf." "Please," he croaked. "I'm tempted, though I shouldn't be," she said. "You've proven yourself weak."
I can beat him."
Suddenly the shame of having failed in front of her crushed Perrin. When had he started worrying about what Lanfear thought of him? He couldn't quite point to it. She tapped one finger on her arm.
"Please," Perrin said, raising a hand. "Please."
"No," she said, turning away. "I've learned the mistake of setting my heart on one who does not deserve it. Goodbye, wolf pup."
She vanished, leaving Perrin on his hands and knees in this strange place.
"Fail,"
a piece of his mind said.
Don't worry about Lanfear. You have to go to Fael.
Yes. Yes, he could go to her, couldn't he? Where was she? The Field of Marilor. That was where he'd left her. It was where she would be. He shifted there, somehow gathering himself just enough to manage it. But of course, she wasn't there. He was in the wolf dream. The portal Rand would send. It would be here. He just had to get to it. He collapsed to the ground and rolled to his back. He felt himself drifting into nothingness. His vision blackened as he stared up at the churning sky.
At least I was there for Rand,
Perrin thought. The wolves could hold Shael Ghul on this side now, couldn't they? They could keep Rand safe. They'd have to.
Fael poked a stick at their meager cook fire. Darkness had fallen, and the fire glowed with a faint red light. They hadn't dared make it larger. Deadly things prowled the blight. Trollocs were the least of the dangers here. The air here smelled pungent, and Fael expected to find a rotting corpse behind every black-speckled shrub. The ground cracked when she stepped, dry earth crushing beneath her boots, as if rain had not been seen in centuries. As she sat in the camp, she saw a group of sickly green lights, like glowing insects in a swarm, passing in the distance over a stand of silhouetted trees. She knew enough of the blight to hold her breath until they passed. She did not know what they were, and did not want to know. She had led her group on a short hike to find this place for a camp. Along the way, one caravan worker had been killed by a twig, another by stepping in what looked like mud, but it had dissolved his leg. He'd gotten some of it on his face. He had thrashed and screamed as he died. They'd had to forcibly gag him to keep the sounds from bringing other horrors. The blight. They couldn't survive up here. A simple walk had killed two of their members, and Fael had some 100 people to try to protect. Guards from the band, some members of Cha Fael, and the wagon drivers and workers from her supply caravan. 8 of the wagons still worked, and they'd brought those to this camp for now. They would probably be too conspicuous to take farther. She wasn't even certain they would survive this night. Light. Their only chance of rescue seemed to lie with the Aes Sedai. Would they notice what had happened and send help? It seemed a very faint hope, but she did not know about the One Power. All right, Fael said softly to those who sat with her. Mandevwin, Aravin, Harnan, Setala, and Arala of Cha Fael. Let's talk. The others looked hollow. Probably, like Fael, they had been frightened with stories of the blight since childhood. The quick deaths in their party soon after entering this land had reinforced that. They knew how dangerous this place was. They kept jumping at every sound in the night. I will explain what I can, Fael said, trying to divert them from the death all around. During the Bubble of Evil, one of those crystals speared Barisha Sedai's foot, right as she made the gateway. A wound? Mandevwin asked from his place beside the fire. Would that have been enough to make the gateway go awry? Truly, I know little of Aes Sedai business, nor have I wanted to. If one is distracted, is it possible to create an accidental opening to the wrong place? Setala frowned, and the expression drew Fael's attention. Setala was neither nobility nor an officer. There was something about the woman, however. She projected authority and wisdom. You know something? Fael asked her. Setala cleared her throat. I know some little about channeling. It was once an area of curiosity to me. Sometimes if a weave is done incorrectly, it simply does nothing. Other times the result is disastrous. I have not heard of a weave doing something like this. working, but in the wrong way. Well, Harnan said, watching that darkness and shivering visibly, the alternative is to think that she wanted to send us to the Blight.
Perhaps she was disoriented, Fael said. The pressure of the moment made her send us to the wrong place. I've been turned about before in a moment of tension, and found myself running in the wrong direction. It could be like that. The others nodded, but again Satala looked concerned.
What is it? Fael prodded.
Aes Sedai training is very extensive in relation to this type of situation, Satala said. No woman reaches the level of Aes Sedai without learning how to channel under extreme pressure. There are specific barriers a woman must clear in order to wear the ring.
So, Fael thought, Satala must have a relative who is Aes Sedai, someone close if they shared information so private. A sister, perhaps?
Then, do we assume that this is some kind of trap? Aravine sounded confused.
That Barisha was some kind of dark friend. Surely the Shadow has greater things to misdirect than a simple supply train?
Fael said nothing.
The horn was safe. The chest it was in now sat in her small tent nearby. They had circled the wagons and had allowed only this one fire. The rest of the caravan slept, or tried to. The still, too silent air made Fael feel as if they were being watched by a thousand eyes. If the Shadow had planned a trap for her caravan, it meant the Shadow knew about the horn. In that case, they were in very serious danger. More serious, even, than being in the Blight itself.
No, Satala said. No, Aravine is right. This could not have been an intentional trap. If the bubble of evil hadn't come, we would never have burst through the opening without looking where it led. So far as we know, these bubbles are completely random.
Unless Barisha was simply taking advantage of the circumstances, Fael thought. Also, there was the woman's death. That wound in her stomach had not looked like one caused by the spikes. It had looked like a knife wound, as if someone had attacked Barisha once the horn was through the gateway, to keep her from telling what she'd done.
Light, Fael thought. I am growing suspicious.
So, Harnan said, what do we do?
That depends, Fael said, looking towards Satala. Is there any way an Aes Sedai could tell where we've been sent?
Satala hesitated, as if reluctant to reveal how much she knew. When she continued, however, she spoke with confidence.
Waves leave behind a residue. So yes, an Aes Sedai could discover where we'd gone. The residue does not last long, however. A few days at most for a powerful weave. And not all channelers can read residues. This is a rare talent.
The way she spoke, so commanding and authoritative, the way she projected an immediate sense of being trustworthy. It wasn't a relative then, Fael thought. This woman trained in the White Tower. Was she perhaps like Queen Morghese? Too weak in the One Power to become Aes Sedai?
We will wait one day, Fael said. If nobody has come for us by then, we will head south and try to escape the Blight as quickly as possible.
I wonder how far north we are,
Harnan said, rubbing his chin.
I don't fancy going over mountains to get back home. You'd rather remain in the Blight?
Mandevwin asked.
Well, no, Harnan said. But it could take months to walk back to safety. Months traveling through the Blight itself.
Light, Fael thought. Traveling months in a place where we're lucky to have lost only two in one day.
They'd never make it. Even without the wagons, the caravan would stand out in this landscape like a fresh wound on diseased skin.
they'd be lucky to last another day or two. She resisted the urge to glance back at the tent. What would happen if she didn't bring it to Matt in time? There is another option, Satala said hesitantly. Fail looked to her. That peak you see to the east of us, Satala said, speaking with obvious reluctance. That is Shale Ghul. Mandevwin whispered something quietly that Fail didn't catch, squeezing his eyes shut. The others looked sick. Fail, however, caught Satala's implication. That is where the Dragon Reborn is making war against the Shadow, Fail said. One of our armies will be there, with channelers who could get us out. Indeed, Satala said. And the area just around Shale Ghul is known as the Blasted Lands, lands that the horrors of the Blight are said to avoid. Because it's so terrible, Arala said. If they don't go there, it's because they fear the Dark One himself. The Dark One and his armies might have their attention on the fighting, Fail said slowly, nodding her head. We can't survive long in the Blight. We'll be dead before the week is out. But if the Blasted Lands are free of those horrors, and if we can reach our armies there... It seemed a far better hope, slim though it was, than trying to march for months in the most dangerous place in the world. She told the others she'd consider what to do, and dismissed them. Her advisors moved off to make their bedrolls, Mandevwin going to check the men on watch. Fail remained staring at the embers of the fire, feeling sick. Someone did kill Berisha, she thought. I'm certain of it. The gateway's location really could have been an accident. Accidents happened even to Aes Sedai, no matter what Satala thought. But if there was a dark friend in the caravan, one who had ducked through the opening and seen that it went to the Blight, they could have easily decided to kill Berisha in order to leave the Horn and the caravan stranded. Satala, Fail said as the woman passed. A word. Satala sat down beside Fail, wearing a composed expression. I know what you're going to ask. How long has it been, Fail asked, since you were in the White Tower? It has been decades now. Are you capable of making a gateway? Satala laughed. Child, I couldn't light a candle. I was burned out in an accident. I haven't held the One Power in over 25 years. I see, Fail said. Thank you. Satala moved off, and Fail found herself wondering, how truthful was her story? Satala had been very helpful in their days together, and Fail couldn't blame the woman for keeping secret her ties to the White Tower. In any other situation, Fail wouldn't have given the woman's story a moment of doubt. However, there was no way out here to confirm what she said. If Satala was Black Ajah in hiding, her story about being burned out could simply be that, a story. Perhaps she could still channel, or perhaps she couldn't but had been stilled as a punishment. Could this woman be an escaped prisoner of the most dangerous type? An agent who had waited decades for the right moment to strike? Satala had been the one to suggest they go to Shale Ghul. Was she seeking to bring the horn to her master? Feeling cold, Fail entered her tent as several members of Chafail set up watch around it. Fail wrapped herself in her bedroll. She knew that she was being overly suspicious. But how else was she to be, considering the circumstances? Light, she thought. The Horn of Valir. Lost in the Blight. A nightmare. Avienda knelt on one knee beside the smoldering corpse, holding her Angreal, the turtle brooch that Elaine had given her. She breathed through her mouth as she gazed down on the man's face. There were a surprising number of these red veils. Whatever their origins, they were not Aiel. They did not follow Je'ito. During the night's fighting, she had seen two maidens take a man captive. He had acted like Guy Shine, but had then killed one from behind with a hidden knife. "Well?" Serene asked, breathless. While those at the field of Merilor rested and prepared for their challenge ahead, this battle at Sheol Ghul continued. The Red Veil attack had lasted all through the night, the following day, and now into the night again. "I think I knew him," Avienda said, disturbed. "He channeled for the first time when I was a child, making Al'Ghoda grow where it should not." She let the veil fall down on his face. "His name was Sorrow. He was kind to me. I watched him run across the dry ground at sunset after vowing to spit in Sightblinder's eye." "I'm sorry," Serene said, though her voice was uncolored by any sympathy. Avienda was growing accustomed to that in the woman. It wasn't that Serene didn't care. She just didn't let caring distract her, at least not when her warder was elsewhere. The Aes Sedai would have made a fine maiden. "Let's keep moving," Avienda said, taking off with her pack of channelers. During the days and nights of fighting, Avienda's team had shifted, melded, and split as women needed rest. Avienda herself had slept sometime during the day. By common agreement, the one leading the circle avoided drawing on her own power. Thus, Avienda was still at reasonable strength, despite so many hours of fighting. This allowed her to remain alert, on the hunt. The other women became wells of power to be drawn upon. She had to be careful not to drain them too far. Tire a woman and she could sleep for a few hours and be back up to fight again. Drain her completely and she could be useless for days. At the moment, Avienda had Flynn and Three Aes Sedai with her. She had learned the weave to tell her when a man was channeling nearby. It was moving through the Aes Sedai and Wise Ones, but having a male channeler with her was far more useful. Flynn pointed toward some flashes of fire on the other side of the valley. They loped in that direction, passing corpses and places where the ground smoldered. With the growing light of dawn, Avienda could see through the cold mist that Darlin's forces still held the mouth of the valley. The Trollocs had pushed forward to the low earthen mounds that Aetoralda had built. Killing had been done there on both sides. The Trollocs had taken far more losses, but then they were also far more numerous. It seemed from her quick glance that they had overrun one of the earthen bulwarks, but Damani riders had come in from the reserves and were pushing them back. Bands of Aiel roved and fought in the mouth of the valley itself, some with red veils, some with black. "Too many," Avienda thought, as she slowed her team with a raised hand. She then continued forward on her own, quietly. She could draw a few hundred paces away from the women and still have access to their power. She picked her way through the barren, rocky fields of the valley. There were three dead bodies to her right, two with black veils. She tested them with a quick delving. She would not be caught by the old trick of hiding among the corpses. She had used that one herself. These three were truly dead, so she continued on in a crouch. In addition to the place where the Tyrans and Damani held the Trollocs back, they had a second force guarding their camp, and the pathway up to where Rand fought. In the space between, Aiel and Red Veils roved in bands, each trying to best the other. Only, some of the Red Veils could channel. The ground thumped and shook nearby. A spray of soil fell through the air. Avienda crouched down lower but quickened her pace. Ahead, over a dozen Siswayaman were rushing the position of two Red Veils, both channelers. The Red Veils cast up the earth beneath the attackers, sending bodies flying. Avienda understood why the Aiel kept going. These Red Veils were an affront, a crime. The Shanshan, who would dare take Wise Ones captive, were not as disgusting as these. Somehow the Shadow had taken the bravest of the Aiel and made them into these things. Avienda struck quickly,
pulling strength through her Angreal and her circle, weaving two lines of fire and hurling them at the Red Veils. She began new weaves immediately, casting up the ground beneath the two channelers, and started a third set of weaves. She threw fire at the Red Veils as they stumbled. One jumped away as the other was caught in her earthen blasts. She struck the one who had fled with spears of flame. Then she hit both corpses with an extra burst of power, just to make certain. These men no longer held to Jito. They were no longer alive. They were weeds to be pulled. She moved forward to check on the Siswaaman. Eight still lived, three of them wounded. Avienda was not particularly good with healing, but she was able to save the life of one man, keeping a wound in his throat from bleeding out. The other survivors gathered the wounded and moved back toward the camp. Avienda stood above the two corpses. She decided not to look at them closely. Seeing one man she had known was bad enough. A shock went through her, and one of her wells of power vanished. Avienda gasped. Another one winked out. She immediately released the circle, then dashed back to where she had left the women. Flashes and explosions shook her. Avienda clung to the one power, her own strength now seeming pitifully small compared to what she'd been using. She stumbled to a halt before the smoldering corpses of Kiruna and Faeldrin. The hideous woman she had seen before, the woman that Avienda was increasingly certain was one of the Forsaken, stood there smiling at her. The horrid woman had her hand on Serene's shoulder. The slender white stood with her head turned toward the Forsaken, staring at her with vapid, adoring eyes. Serene's warder lay dead at her feet. Both vanished, twisting upon themselves, traveling without use of a gateway. Avienda fell to her knees beside the dead. Nearby, Dahmer Flynn groaned and tried to pull himself free of the cast-up earth. His left arm was completely gone, burned away at the shoulder. Avienda cursed and did what she could to heal him, though he slipped into unconsciousness. She suddenly felt very tired, and very, very alone.
Chapter 35. A Practiced Grin. Alvar missed wind. Bella, the stout, shaggy mare he now rode, wasn't bad, really. She was just slow. Alvar knew this because he kept trying to nudge her forward, but she continued plodding along behind the other horses. Nothing he did could make her go any faster. Alvar wanted to ride like a storm. Instead, he rode like a sturdy log in a placid river. He wiped his brow. The blight was pretty scary, and the others, most of them didn't have horses, walked as if each step was going to bring 1,000 Trollocs down on them. The rest of the caravan spoke in hushed voices, and they looked at the hillsides with suspicion. They passed a group of withered trees with sap leaking from open sores in the bark. That sap looked too red, almost like blood. Nearby, one of the caravan drivers stepped up to inspect it. Vines snapped down from the limbs above, vines that looked brown and dead, yet moved like snakes. Before Alvar could scream, the caravan driver was hanging, dead, from the upper branches of the tree. The entire line of people froze in place, horrified. Above, the tree actually pulled the dead man into itself, through a split in the bark, ingesting him. Maybe that sap was blood. Alvar looked on, horrified. "Steady," Lady Fael said, a slight tremor in her voice. "I've told you, don't draw close to plants. Don't touch anything." They moved on, a solemn bunch. Sandeep, riding nearby, muttered to himself, "That's the 15th one. 15 men dead in a few days. Light, we're never going to survive this." If only it were Trollocs. Alvar couldn't fight trees and insects, who could? But Trollocs? Those he'd be able to fight. Alvar had his knife, and he'd learned a few things about using it from Harnan and Silvic. Over wasn't that tall, but he figured that would make Trollocs underestimate him. He could lunge low and go for their vitals before they knew what was happening. He told himself this to keep his hands from shaking as he kicked Bella, hoping to move up by Lady Fael. In the distance, he heard a screeching sound, like something dying in a horrible way. Ulver shivered. He'd heard that same sound earlier in the day. Did it sound closer now? Satala gave him a worried glance as he neared the front. The others tried everything they could to keep him from danger. He steeled himself, ignoring that horrid screeching off in the distance. Everyone thought Ulver was fragile, but he wasn't. They hadn't seen what he had growing up. In truth, he didn't like thinking about those times. It seemed as if he'd lived three lives. One before his parents died, one when he'd been alone, and now this one. Anyway, he was used to fighting people bigger than he was. It was the last battle. They kept saying everyone would be needed. Well, why not him? When the Trollocs came, the first thing he'd do was climb down off this slow mount. He could stroll faster than this animal could gallop. Well, the Aiel didn't need horses. Ulver hadn't gone to train with them yet, but he would. He had it planned out. He hated all Aiel, but mostly the Shido. And he would need to learn their secrets if he was going to kill them. He'd go among them and demand to be trained. They'd take him in, and would treat him poorly, but eventually they'd respect him and let him train with their warriors. There were stories about that. It was how things happened. After he knew their secrets, he'd go to the snakes and foxes and receive answers on how to locate the Shido who had murdered his father. From there, tracking and killing them would be a quest worthy of its own story. "I'll take Noel," he thought. "He's been everywhere. He can be my guide. He..." Noel was dead. Sweat crawled down the side of Ulver's face as he stared at the rocky path ahead. They'd passed more of those terrible trees, and now everyone gave them a wide berth. Beside the path, though, one of the men pointed out a large patch of that killing mud. It looked brown and thick, and Ulver spotted several bones peeking out. This place was horrible. He wished Noel were here. Noel had gone everywhere, seen everything. He'd know how to get them out of this place. But Noel was gone. Ulver had only heard the news recently, filtered through things that the Lady Moiraine had shared about what happened at the Tower of Genji. "Everyone's dying," Ulver thought, eyes still forward. "Everyone." Matt had run off to the Seanchan, told Manus to fight alongside Queen Elaine. One by one, everyone in this group was being eaten by trees, mud, or monsters. Why did they all leave Ulver alone? He rubbed at his bracelet. Noel had given it to him shortly before leaving. Woven of rough fibers, it was of a type warriors wore in a faraway land, so Noel had told him. It was the mark of a man who had seen battle and lived. Noel. Dead. Would Matt die, too? Ulver felt hot, tired, and very frightened. He nudged Bella forward, and fortunately she obeyed, trotting a little faster up the slope so Ulver moved up the line. They'd abandoned the wagons, then left for some place called the Blasted Lands, which required them to climb some foothills. In the morning, they'd entered a pass between the mountains. Though he felt warm, the air was getting cooler as they climbed. He didn't mind that at all. It still smelled awful, though, like rotting corpses. Their group had started with 50 soldiers and almost half as many wagon drivers and workers. There were also a handful of others, like Ulver, Satala, and the half-dozen members of Lady Fael's bodyguard. So far, they'd lost 15 people to hazards of the Blight, including 5 killed by some horrible three-eyed things that had attacked the camp yesterday morning. He'd overheard Lady Fael saying that she considered them lucky to have lost only 15 so far, that it could have been worse. It didn't seem lucky to Ulver. This place was awful, and he wanted to be out of it. The waste wouldn't be as bad as this, would it? Shafael's men and women acted like Aiel. A little bit like Aiel. Maybe they'd done as Alvar wanted to and trained in the waste. He'd have to ask them. He rode on for another half hour or so. Eventually, he coaxed Bella up to the front of the line. Lady Fael's brilliant black mare looked fast. Why couldn't Alvar have been given a horse like that one? Fael had Matt's chest tied to the back of her horse. At first, Alvar had been pleased with that, as he figured Matt would want that tabak pretty badly. Matt always complained about not having good tabak. Then Alvar heard Fael explaining to someone else that the chest had simply been a convenient place to stow some of her things. Had she thrown away the tabak? Matt wouldn't like that. Fael looked at him, and Alvar grinned, giving it as much confidence as he could. It wouldn't do for her to see how scared he was. Most women liked his grin. He'd been practicing it, though he didn't use Matt's grin as a model. Matt's always made him look guilty. You learned grins when you were forced to fend for yourself, and Alvar needed one that made him seem innocent. And he was innocent. Mostly. Fael did not smile back. Alvar figured that she was pretty good to look at, despite that nose. She wasn't very soft, though. Bloody ashes, but she had a glare that could rust good iron. Fael rode between Aravine and Vannin. Though they spoke softly, Alvar could hear what they were saying. He made sure to stare in the other direction so they'd think he wasn't eavesdropping. And he wasn't. He just wanted to be out of the trail dust of the other horses. Yes, Vannin was whispering. It may not seem it, but we're close to the blasted lands. Burn my own mother, I can't believe we're going there. But do you feel the air? It's getting cooler. We haven't seen anything really nasty since those three-eyed things yesterday morning.
We are close, Aravine agreed. Soon we will be near the Dark One, in a land where nothing grows, corrupted or not, where there is no life, not even the nastier things from the Blight.
I suppose that should be a comfort.
Not really, Vannin said, wiping his brow. Because the Shadowspawn up here are more dangerous. If we survive, it will be because there's a bloody war going on. The Shadowspawn are all locked in battle. If we're lucky, the blasted lands, except right around Shael Ghul, will be as empty as a man's purse after a deal with the bloody sea folk. Pardon my language, m'lady. Alvar squinted at the approaching mountain peak.
That's where the bloody Dark One lives, Alvar thought. And that's probably where Matt is, not Marilor.
Matt talked about staying away from danger, but he always found his way to it anyway. Alvar figured that Matt was just trying to be humble, but was bad at it. Why else would you say you don't want to be a hero, then always bloody end up charging right into danger?
And this path?
Fael asked Vannin.
You said there might have been traffic here recently. Wouldn't that indicate that this place is far from as empty as you so colorfully described it?
Vannin grunted. It does look used.
So someone has been moving wagons through the area, Aravine said. I don't know if that is a good sign or a bad one.
I don't think there are any good signs up here, Vannin said. Maybe we should just pick some place nearby and hole up waiting. He sighed, wiping his brow again, though Alvar didn't see why. It was growing pretty cold. He could tell, even through the course of the day. And there seemed to be fewer plants, too. He was just fine with that. He glanced over his shoulder at the stand of trees that had taken that poor man's life. There didn't seem to be any others like it nearby, particularly not ahead of them along the path.
We can't afford to wait, Vannin, Fael said. I intend to get back to Marilor one way or another. The Dragon Reborn will be fighting at Thakandar. That's where we need to go to get out of this forsaken place.
Vannin groaned, but Alvar smiled. He would find his way to Matt and show how dangerous he could be in battle. Then
maybe Matt wouldn't leave him like the others had.
That would be good, as Alvar was going to need Matt's help tracking down those Shido. After all he'd learned training with the band, he was certain nobody would push him around, and nobody would take those he loved from him ever again.
There are accounts in the archives that explain what we saw. Cadswain picked up her cup of tea to warm her hands. The Aiel girl, Avienda, sat on the floor of the tent. What I wouldn't give to have that one in the tower, Cadswain thought. These wise ones, they had fight to them. Real bite, like the best of the women in the White Tower. Cadswain was increasingly convinced that the Shadow for years had been carrying out a complex plan to undermine the White Tower. It went deeper than Swan Sanchez's unfortunate unseating and Elida's reign. It might be decades, centuries, before they understood the extent of the Shadow's planning. However, the sheer number of Black Sisters, hundreds, not the few dozen Cadswain had guessed, shouted of what had happened. For now, Cadswain had to work with what she had. That included these wise ones, poorly trained in using weaves, but never lacking in grit. Useful. Like Sorilea, despite her weakness in the One Power, who sat farther back in the tent, watching. "I have made some inquiries, child," Cadswain said to Avienda. "What this woman does is indeed traveling. However, the only fragments of documents mentioning it date back to the War of Power." Avienda frowned. "I saw no weaves, Cadswain," said I. Cadswain masked a smile at the respectful tone. The Al'Thor boy had put this girl in command, and in truth better her than some others. However, he should have chosen Cadswain, and Avienda likely knew it. "That is because the woman was not weaving the One Power," Cadswain replied. "What else would it be?" "Do you know why the Dark One was originally freed?" Avienda looked as if remembering something. "Ah, yes. Then they are channeling the Dark One's power?" "It is called the True Power," Cadswain said. "The accounts say that traveling by the True Power works in the way you have seen this woman move. Few saw it happen. The Dark One was miserly with his essence during the War of Power, and only the most favored were granted access. I surmise from this fact that this is most definitely one of the Forsaken. From your description of what she did to poor Serene, I would suspect it is Grendahl." "The stories never mentioned Grendahl being so ugly," Sorilea said softly. "If you were one of the Forsaken, easily recognized by description, would you not wish to change your appearance to remain unknown?" "Perhaps," Sorilea said. "But then I would not use this true power, as you name it. That would defeat the purpose of my disguise." "From what Avienda has told us," Cadswain noted, "the woman did not have much of a choice. She had to escape quickly." Cadswain and Sorilea met eyes, and each nodded in agreement. They would hunt this Forsaken, the two of them. "I won't have you dying on me now, boy," Cadswain thought, glancing over her shoulder toward where Al'Thor, Nynaeve, and Moiraine continued their work. Every channeler in the camp could feel that pulsing. "At least, not until you've done what you need to do." Cadswain had expected the Forsaken to be here. It was why she'd come to this battlefront. Wind shook the tent, chilling Cadswain down deep. This place was awful, even when the battle slowed. The dread that hung here was like that of a funeral for a child. It stifled laughter, killed smiles. The Dark One watched. Light, but it would be good to leave this place. Avienda drank her tea. The woman still looked haunted, although she had obviously lost allies in battle before. "I left them to die," she whispered. "Faugh," Cadswain said to her. "You are not to blame for what one of the Forsaken did, child." "You don't understand," Avienda said. "We were in a circle, and they tried to break free. I felt them, but I didn't know what was happening.
I held on to their power, and so they couldn't fight her. I left them helpless.
Well, from now on, don't leave those in your circle behind, Cadswain said briskly. You could not have known what would happen.
If you suspect this one is nearby, Avienda, Soralia said, you will send word to Cadswain, me, or Amis. There is no shame in admitting that another is too strong to face alone. We will defeat this woman together and protect the Karakhan.
Very well, Avienda said. But you will do the same for me. All of you.
She waited. Cadswain reluctantly agreed, as did Soralia. Fael crouched in a dark tent. The air had grown even colder now that they were close to Thakandar. She ran her thumb along the hilt of her knife, breathing in slowly and evenly, then releasing the breath in the same manner. She stared at the tent flaps, unblinking. She'd placed the horn's chest there, with one corner sticking out into the night. She felt more alone here on the border of the blasted lands, surrounded by supposed allies, than she had in the Shido camp. 2 nights ago, she'd been called out of her tent to inspect some odd tracks that had worried the men. They hadn't lost anyone since drawing so close to the blasted lands. That part of the plan was working, but tensions were still high. She'd been gone only a few minutes, but when she returned, the horn's chest in her tent had been moved just slightly. Someone had tried to open it. Light. Fortunately, they hadn't managed to break the lock, and the horn had still been there when she'd looked. The traitor could be anyone. One of the Red Arms, a wagon driver, a member of Cha Fael. Fael had spent the past 2 nights being extra, even obviously vigilant with the chest, to frustrate the thief. Then tonight she'd complained of a headache and allowed Satala to fix her some tea to help her sleep. She'd brought the tea back to her tent, had not taken a sip, and now crouched, waiting. The chest's corner would be obvious, poking out into the night. Would they try again? As a precaution, she'd removed the horn from the chest and taken it when she went out to answer the call of nature. She'd hidden it there in a cubby of rock, and upon returning, had put Cha Fael on patrol duty for the night, away from her tent. They had not liked leaving her unguarded, but Fael had made it clear that she was worried about tensions among the men. That would be enough. Light. Let it be enough. Hours passed with Fael crouched in that same position, ready to leap up and call the alarm the moment someone tried to enter her tent. Surely they would try again tonight, when she was supposedly ill. Nothing. Her muscles ached, but she didn't move. The thief could be out there in the dark, waiting, wondering if this was the right moment to strike, to grab the horn and run off to his or her masters. A scream shattered the night. Fael wavered. A distraction? That scream, she thought, judging the direction. It came from just west of here, near where she'd hidden the horn. Fael cursed, making a snap decision. The chest was empty. If she took the bait and it really was just a distraction, then she would not lose anything. If, on the other hand, the thief had anticipated her, she darted from the tent as others scrambled from bedrolls. Members of Cha Fael raced through the camp. The yell came again. It was accompanied by a haunting screech, a type that had been following them in the distance. She crashed through some thin, blight-stained weeds. Running through them was a foolish move in a place where a twig could kill, but she was not thinking clearly. She arrived first on the scene, reaching the area where she'd hidden the horn. There stood not only Vannin, but Harnin as well. Vannin clutched the horn of Valir in thick arms, while Harnin fought against some kind of beast with dark fur, shouting and swinging his sword. Vannin looked at Fael and grew as pale as a white cloak's shirt. Thief! Fael shouted. Stop him! He has stolen the horn of Valir! Vannin cried out, tossing the horn as if it had bitten him, then dashing away.
Light, but he could move quickly for one of his bulk. He grabbed Harnan by the shoulder, pulling him to the side as the beast screamed that haunting wail. Other roars came in the distance. Fail skidded to the ground, grabbing the horn and clutching it close. These men were no common thieves. They had not only seen through her plan, but anticipated exactly where she'd hidden the horn. She felt like a farm girl who had just fallen for a townsman's three-cup scam. Those who had come running with her stood stunned, either by the sight of the horn or the monster. The creature screeched. It looked like some kind of bear with too many arms, though it was larger than any bear Fail had seen. She stumbled to her feet. There was no time to look for the thieves as the beast smashed its way into Fail's guards. It ripped the head off a member of Cha Fail, screeching. Fail shouted, flinging a knife at the thing as Arla hacked at one of its shoulders with her sword. Just then a second beast came lumbering over the rocks, next to Fail. She cursed, leaping away, flinging a knife. She hit it, or at least the thing cried out in what sounded like anger and pain. As Mandavwin rode up on horseback bearing a torch, the light revealed that the horrible things had faces like those of insects, with a multitude of fang-like teeth. Fael's knife protruded from one bulb-like eye.
"Protect the lady!"
Mandavwin yelled, throwing spears to nearby red arms, who rammed them at the first monster, pushing it back from Arla, who scrambled away, bleeding. The woman hadn't lost her sword, though. Fail fell back as Cha Fail organized around her, then looked down at what she held. The horn of Valir itself, pulled from the sack in which she'd hidden it. She could blow it. No, she thought. It is bound to Coffin. To her it would be just an ordinary horn.
Steady,
Mandavwin said, dancing his warhorse back as one of the beasts lunged at it.
Verdun, London, we need more spears. Go! The things fight like boars. Draw them forward. Impale them.
The tactic worked on one of the monsters, but as Mandavwin yelled, the other one charged at him and grabbed his horse by the neck. The beast brushed aside soldiers who tried to strike, and Mandavwin crashed to the ground groaning. Still clutching the horn, Fail dashed past where a group of red arms had managed to skewer the other beast. She grabbed a freshly lit torch and threw it at the other monster, lighting the fur on its back. The thing bellowed as fire raced up its spine, the fur burning like dry tinder. It dropped Mandavwin's dead horse, the head ripped nearly free as it thrashed, yelling and howling.
"Grab the wounded," Fail ordered.
She took a member of the band by the arm. "See to Mandavwin." The man looked down at the horn she held, eyes wide, then shook himself and nodded, calling for two others to help him lift the man. "My lady," Aravin asked, standing near the bushes behind, "what is happening?"
"Two red arms tried to steal what I have been carrying," Fail said. "Now we're going to ride away into the night."
"But..."
"Listen,"
Fail said, pointing into the darkness. Distantly, a dozen different screeches sounded, responding to the cries of the dying beast. "The screams will draw further horrors, as will the scent of spilled blood. We go. If we can get deeply enough into the blasted lands tonight, we might be safe. Rouse the camp and get the wounded onto horses. Prepare everyone else for a forced quick march. Quickly!" Aravin nodded, scrambling off. Fail spared a glance in the direction Harnan and Vannin had gone. She longed to hunt them down, but tracking them in the night would require them to move slowly, and that would mean death this night. Besides, who knew what resources a pair of dark friends had access to? They would flee. And light. She hoped that she hadn't been deceived more than it seemed. If Vannin had somehow known to prepare a dummy horn, a replica to drop and leave for Fail to rescue as he fled, she'd never know. She'd reach the last battle with a fake horn, and perhaps doom them all. That possibility haunted her as the caravan's members hastily moved into the darkness, hoping in light and luck to escape the dangers of the night. Chapter 36. unchangeable things. Something was wrong with Rand. Nynaeve clutched the stalagmite deep within the pit of doom, holding herself from being pulled by the winds into that nothingness in front of her. Moiraine had called it the Dark One's essence, but wouldn't that make it the true power? Worse, if his essence was in the world, wouldn't that mean that he had broken free? Whatever it was, its nature was pure evil, and it filled Nynaeve with a terror like none she had ever felt before in her life. It pulled with a powerful force, drawing all that was nearby into it. She feared that if she let go, she would be yanked in. Already it had stolen her shawl, making it vanish. If that nothingness pulled her in, her life would end, perhaps her soul as well. Rand, Nynaeve thought. Could she do something to help him? He stood before Moradin, the two of them locked together, sword against sword, frozen as if in a moment. Sweat trickled down Rand's face. He did not speak. He didn't so much as blink. His foot had touched the darkness. At that moment he had frozen, and so had Moradin. They were like statues. The air howled around them, but did not seem to affect them as it did Nynaeve. They'd been standing like that, frozen, for a good 15 minutes. All in all, it had been less than an hour since the group of them had entered the pit to face the Dark One. Nynaeve watched rocks slide across the ground, then be sucked into that blackness. Her clothing rippled and flapped as if in a strong wind, as did Moiraine's, who huddled nearby, holding to her own tooth of stone. Mercifully, the stench of sulfur that had filled the cavern was drawn away here into the blackness. She couldn't use the one power. Rand drew every bit of it she could hold, though he didn't seem to be doing anything with it. Could she reach Moradin? He didn't seem to be able to move. What if she took a rock to his head? It would be better than waiting. Nynaeve tested her weight against the pull of the nothingness ahead, relaxing her grip on the stalagmite. She immediately started to slip and pulled herself back. "I am not spending the last battle clinging to a rock," she thought. "Not the same one the whole time, at the very least." She had to risk moving. Going directly forward seemed too dangerous. But if she moved sideways... Yes, there was another stalagmite nearby to her right. She managed to let go of her hold and half-slip, half-scuttle to the next stalagmite. From there she picked out another one, carefully eased off her hold and grabbed it instead. The process was very slow. "Rand, you wool-headed fool," she thought. If he'd let her or Moiraine lead the circle, then maybe they could have done something while he was fighting. She reached another stalagmite, then stopped as she saw something to her right. She almost screamed. A woman huddled there, hidden against the wall, sheltered from the wind by the rocks. She appeared to be crying. Nynaeve glanced at Rand, who was still locked in stasis with Moradin, then approached the woman. The greater number of stalagmites here meant that Nynaeve could crawl more safely, the stones blocking the pull of the nothingness. Nynaeve reached the woman. She was chained to the wall. "Alana?" Nynaeve shouted over the wind. "Light! What are you doing here?" The Aes Sedai blinked reddened eyes at Nynaeve. Her eyes stared dully as if she had no mind. As Nynaeve examined the woman, she noticed that the entire left side of Alana's body was bloodied from a knife wound to the gut. Light. Nynaeve should have known that from the paleness of the woman's face. Why stab her and leave her here? She bonded Rand, Nynaeve realized. Oh, Light. It was a trap. Moradin had left Alana bleeding, then confronted Rand. When Alana died, Rand, as her warder, would be driven mad with rage, making him easy for Moradin to destroy. Why hadn't he noticed? Nynaeve's, "Oh, Light. It was a trap." Muradin had left Alanna bleeding, then confronted Rand. When Alanna died, Rand, as her warder, would be driven mad with rage, making him easy for Muradin to destroy. Why hadn't he noticed? Nynaeve fished at her pouches for herbs, then stopped short. Could herbs do anything at this point? She needed to use the one power to heal such a wound. Nynaeve ripped the woman's clothing, making a bandage, and then tried to draw Sidar for healing. Rand had it, and he wouldn't let go. Frantic, she tried to batter him away, but Rand held tight, tighter as she tried to push against him. He did seem to be channeling it somehow, but she couldn't see the weaves. She could feel something, but with the howling wind and the strange nature of the pit, it was like a tempest swirling around her. The power was wrapped up in that somehow. Blast it! She needed Sidar. It wasn't Rand's fault. He could not give her any power while leading the circle. Nynaeve pressed her hand against Alanna's wound, feeling helpless. Dared she call for Rand to release her from the circle? If she did, Moradin would undoubtedly turn on her and attack Alanna. What to do? If this woman died, Rand would lose control. That likely would be the end of him, and of the last battle.
Matt hacked at the wood with his axe to sharpen it to a point. "See," he said, "it doesn't need to be fancy. Save your pretty carpentry to impress the mayor's daughter." The watching men and women nodded with grim determination. They were farmers, villagers, and craftsmen, like people he'd known back in the Two Rivers. Matt had thousands of them under his command. He'd never have suspected that there would be so many. The good people of the land had come to fight. Matt figured they were insane to a person. If he had been able to escape, he would be hiding in a basement somewhere. Burn him, but he would have tried. Those dice rattled in his head, just as they'd been doing ever since Egwene had given him control of all the armies of the Light. Being bloody to Viren was not worth two beans. He kept at it, shaping his stake for the palisade. One fellow watched particularly carefully, an old farmer with skin so leathery that Trolloc swords would likely just bounce off. He looked familiar to Matt for some reason. "Burn these memories," Matt thought. Undoubtedly this fellow resembled someone from one of those old memories Matt had been given. Yes, that felt right. He could not quite remember. A cart? A fade? "Come on, Renald," the fellow said to one of his companions, another farmer, borderlander stock from the looks of him. "Let's go on down the line and see if we can hurry the other lads up." The two headed off as Matt finished his steak, then wiped his brow. He reached for another length of wood. He had better give these sheepherders another demonstration, when a cotton-sore-clad figure ran up along the mostly finished palisade wall. Urien had bright red hair, kept short save for the tail in the back. He raised a hand to Matt as he passed.
"They are agitated, Matrim Cawthon," Urien said, not stopping. "I believe they are coming in this direction."
"Thanks," Matt called. "I owe you."
The Aiel turned as he ran, jogging backward for a second and facing Matt.
"Just win this battle. I have bet a skin of Usquai upon our success."
Matt snorted. The only thing more discomforting than a stoic Aiel was a grinning one. Bet? On the outcome of this battle? What kind of bet was that? If they lost, nobody would live long enough to collect. Matt frowned. Actually, that was a pretty good bet to be making.
"Who did you find to take that bet?" Matt called.
"Urien!"
But the man was already too far away to hear. Matt grumbled, but handed his axe to one of the people nearby, a slender Tyran woman.
"Keep them in line, Sind."
"Yes, Lord Cawthon."
"I'm no bloody lord," Matt said by habit as he picked up his Ashandarai.
He walked off, then turned to look at the palisade being erected and caught sight of a handful of Death Watch guards walking along the rows of working people. Like wolves among the sheep, Matt hurried on. His armies did not have much time left to prepare. Using gateways had put them ahead of the Trollocs, but they had not escaped. like there was no escape. Matt had been given his choice of battlefields, though, and this Marilor place would work best. Like picking the plot for your own grave, Matt thought. Sure, I'd rather not have to choose in the first place. The palisade was rising in front of the woods east of the field. He did not have time to section off or surround the entire area with a palisade, and doing so would not make much sense anyway. With those Sharan channelers, the shadow could rip through walls like a sword through silk. But some palisades, with catwalks on top, would give his archers height to target Trollocs. Matt had two rivers to work with here. The River Mora flowed in a southwest direction, running between the heights and Dasharnab. Its southern bank was in Shinar, the northern flank in Arafel. It joined the River Aranin, which ran directly westward at the southern edge of the field. Those rivers would serve better than any walls, particularly now that he had the resources to defend them correctly. Well, if you could call them resources. Half his soldiers were as new as spring grass, and the other half had fought near to death the week before. The Borderlanders had lost 2 men out of 3. Light, 2 out of 3. A lesser army would have disbanded. Counting everyone he had, Matt would be outnumbered 4 to 1 when those Trollocs arrived, at least according to the reports from the Fists of Heaven. It was going to be messy. Matt pulled his hat down further, then scratched at the side of the new eye patch that Tuon had given him. Red leather. He liked it. "Here now," he said, passing some of the new Tower Guard recruits. They were sparring with quarterstaffs. Spearheads were still being forged to go on the ends. The men looked more likely to hurt themselves than the enemy. Matt handed his Ashandarai to a man, then took a quarterstaff from another as the first hastily saluted. Most of these men were not old enough to need to shave more than once a month. If the boy whose staff he had taken was a day over 15, Matt would eat his boots. He would not even boil them first. "You can't cringe every time the staff hits something," Matt said. "Close your eyes on the battlefield and you're dead. Didn't you lot pay any attention last time?"